You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 100 and whatever of The Guidepost. It's Tony and Cody today. How are you doing, Cody?
What up, what up? All good down here.
We are, we're just going to go over what's going on with striped bass. So everyone knows there's going to be a special meeting of the Striped Bass Management Board on December 16th. And that's available in person or webinar. And they're gonna take a look at the projections and see if we need any adjustments to rebuild by 2029. So what we really wanted to do was give our take on it, tell everyone a little bit about what's going on, and give everyone an opportunity over the holiday to listen to this short, probably about 30-minute podcast, and be in a good place, kind of understand, because after the holiday, this is gonna go quick. So, Cody, just in regard to the timeline, the technical committee and the stock assessment subcommittee are reviewing the second draft report, and we are going to see right now, and we're going to see the final report posted on December 3rd. December 5th, there's going to be an informational public webinar on that report. The 9th is an advisory meeting. The 10th is public comment deadline. And again, the 16th is the board meeting. So
layman's terms, right? A week from now, we're going to get the final info.
Yep.
ASGA will put out a bunch of stuff to guide public comment. Here's, you know, our official strategy, what we're looking to do, what we think is going to be the most impactful. And then advocates will get, give or take, a few hours, basically about a week, to get their public comment in before the public comment deadline. And then after public comment submitted, that big day that we all got to keep on our calendars, December 16th board meeting. So in simplest terms, a week more for info, a week for comments, then one big meeting to stay focused on.
And our plan is to have that letter ready on or about December 4th. We just have to wait for that final report to be posted. We're going to be doing all the background work over the holiday, and we're going to give all of y'all an opportunity to sign on to our letter if you believe in our position. And if not, please comment on what you believe in. Because I really think things are going to stay. The results of this meeting are going to stick until that benchmark stock assessment comes out in 2029. So, Cody, let's just dive in to what the current situation is, what we're looking at, what our concerns are, and what we think our position should be. So when you look at the projections for 2029 to rebuild to target, it actually looks a lot better than we thought it would look like. And the most logical question is, well, how does it look better if we've had 6 failed spawns in a row? The answer to that is simple, is the spawning stock biomass is not going to be impacted for that until 2027. So you have an average 2017, an average 2018, a really great, what was a really great 15, what's left of the 11s. And I got to tell you, we're going to get pretty doggone close to target. If we stay at the fishing mortality level of 2024, which was pretty low, but that only includes up to wave 4, a little bit of concerns about wave 5 and 6, because that's usually, well, usually, you know, the past couple of years, that's when the Stripers are kind of planted off New Jersey.
And Tony, real quick, just for maybe new listeners, again, maybe a quick recap, just what are the waves? Explaining what waves are.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so the MRIP numbers, and we'll get into the limitations of MRIP here as well, but fishing effort is measured in waves, and throughout the course of the year, there are essentially six waves. That's about as granular as MRIP can get. These waves, you know, last a little bit over a month, and that information is somewhat accurate. If you go down to like real short periods of time, like 2 weeks, it's just wildly inaccurate. They don't really know what's going on. And especially if you take it on a state by state level versus a coastwide level. So the big message here is it isn't as bad as it looks. And depending on what position the technical committee and the stock assessment subcommittees put forth, my best guess is we're looking at probably like an 11% reduction. On the highest end of the six or seven potential models that they're going to use for the reduction to achieve rebuilding by 2029, the variance was between 8 and 14%. There was one at 8% reduction, 10% reduction, 12% reduction, and 14% reduction. And that all depended on how they kind of amalgamated the information. Now, in my heart of hearts, the most positive projection was to maintain the fishing mortality levels of 2024. And let's get into that for a second. So fishing effort has collapsed. So anyone that's running around saying that catch and release mortality is half of the problem has not been paying attention to the numbers. Not as many people are fishing. And you can ask any tackle shop who's going to be honest with you up and down the coast, and they will tell you the same thing. Not as many fishing trips for striped bass are taking place. Not as much equipment is being sold. Thank God there were Bonito and Albies around for a lot of our guides. We know like they were vacant in Rhode Island, and they didn't see Albies very much in Montauk. Cape Cod did. I'm not going to get into it, but thank God in some areas there were other fish around, because there wasn't a lot of enthusiasm for striper trips and there weren't as many of them.
And with the goal of maybe kind of being the voice of oversimplification at times throughout this, I mean, at simplest terms, right? Less fish, less reason to go fishing, and less chance to catch a fish, less. And so that translates all the way through. That's not just boats with center consoles and, you know, thousands of dollars of Shimano's and Daiwa gear and, you know, the best of the best. That also translates to guys that are on the jetty, you know, stopping in for a couple hours after work, sitting on a fishing pier. I mean, that's everyone when it comes down to total fishing effort. And everything we're hearing from up and down the coast, right, there's not a lot of small fish around. And when it comes to striped bass, outside of trying to get a slot for the table or wanting to catch a big one, or if you're a trophy hunter, people want to catch a bunch of fish, and small schoolies being in and around inshore, near shore opportunities create that opportunity and that desire to go fishing. So when you don't have a lot of small fish around to chase from shore or to chase close to shore, you're going to have less people want to go fishing.
So the most striking reality that supports what Cody just said is there was a pretty big fear that if we went to this real tight 3-inch slot, and this is, we're going to dive right into the possible management options now. So again, we're looking at about an 11% reduction in fishing mortality. That's what we need to hit 2029 target based on the F2024 levels thus far through wave four, and a little bit of concerns there, but There was a deep fear that catch and release mortality would skyrocket because of a tight 3-inch slot, and the exact opposite happened. Harvest mortality skyrocketed, 30%, 32%, in 2022, 17% in 2023. And that is because that robust 2015 year class was smack dab in the middle of the slot. But in conjunction with that, we saw about a 10 to 12% reduction in catch and release mortality. So logically, you look at that and you say, well, how the heck, coastwide, how did we go from 50% of the fishing mortalities catch and release to 40%? Well, it's because there's less fishing trips taking place. That's how that number is worked out. How, what's the effort? How many fishing trips are taking place? And then just, you know, multiply that by 9%. So it's really hard to imagine tightening up a slot to 3 inches and seeing release mortality fall by that much. And the only answer to that is people are fishing less. And ultimately, unfortunately for our guides and tackle shops, that is probably what's going to save striped bass. The lack of effort, because fishing stinks in a lot of places for a good proportion of the year. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So there was a big fish bite between Maine and New Hampshire. Yes, there was. Well, guess what? You're probably fishing the 1996 year class. Okay. These things live a long time. Again, go to the otolith versus scale regression study on mass DMF. Look at the age of the fish. A 46 inch striper is 30 years old. It's not 18 years old. It's 30 years old. And we went through that on previous podcasts. So it's really not hard to understand why we have some big fish left, because we're fishing on those dominant year classes that brought us out of the moratorium. We're not going to have those forever.
It is funny also how the, you know, use need better data crowd and those voices that we heard about a year ago, now that we've seen a full essentially calendar year play out of striped bass, even the guys who are saying the data is bad, open it up. You look at the different head boats, and a lot of the catch reports, a lot of the inferences you can make from social media, from this, it reflects the data. Like you see people, you see these big boats saying, we went out, we had a great day, everyone caught their slot, and we even released a handful of, you know, oversized fish, overslot fish. What a great day. Book your charter tomorrow. Fishing's never
Cody,
been better.
Cody, do you mind if I read a report from one of those boats? I've got it right here on my phone.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say is that's what the data shows, is that you've got this set of slot to just overslot fish. You got your 15s. You have a couple healthier to average year classes of these bigger fish, and that's reflected exactly what these boats are putting up.
So, Cody, what have we heard? That catch and release fishermen are the problem, that we catch our limit and go home, and it's mostly from the party boat crowd in certain states. So I'm not going to read the name of the boat or what fleet it's from, but it says, today's 9 a.m. trip on the ... caught 460, but it's got numbers and then parenthetical words, 460 striped bass, full caps, keeping a full boat limit. Crazy, crazy fishing today. Limited out by 11 a.m. Striper bluts daily. Go to this website for tickets. Well, it seems to me that they're making money off catch and release fishing these big fish, right, Cody? 460 released in one day on one boat. Wow.
I thought they catch their limit and go home. And again, this That's is not an indictment too. Of this one boat. We're just saying this is an example of the type communications that we heard through all these past management meetings, where the catch and release guy's the wrong one. No one's going to book our trips with the small. Okay. I thought the small slot was going to hinder and shut down your business. And you just told me you caught a full boat limit. So clearly the slot didn't hinder your boat limit. Clearly you do have a catch and release impact. You don't just catch your limit and go home because you caught however many bajillion over the slot or after.
Oh my goodness. Cody, I have videos that they posted on social media where they have multiple striped bass in one net, and the captain is instructing the mate to kick them out of the net onto the deck, and they are clearly oversized fish. So, I mean, we could do a deep dive on release handling. They're full of shit. What do you want me to say? 460 striped bass caught in a day. I mean, holy shit.
Yeah. And then you got like, a light tackle boat who's apparently the problem with release mortality. And that's like every guy who's like kissing the fish and like, I'm going to massage its scales before I release it to increase its, you know, oxygen consumption. And you're like, all right, you're doing too much. Just put the fish back in the water. And then those guys are like, that's the problem. And they're spiking it from, you know, the top of the Empire State Building.
Oh, I have the spiking videos too. So I guess, you know, the funny thing is, it's like, I guess you can lie at a meeting, but your social media does not reflect the lies that you were telling at said meeting. So let's keep going on this. So catch and release mortality plummeted. Coastwide, 10%. That's a lot of fish. And we all know that the mass DMF study's coming out. We all know that NOAA overestimated effort by 40%. So the reality is, like, catch and release mortality with that FES overestimation, shit. I mean, what is it? Probably 30% of harvest. We all know that. Yeah, we all know that, which means that the commercial sector's harvest is one hell of a lot more than 10%. Our numbers are dropping like a rock. Our numbers aren't accurate because of the FES, and we're not incorporating the mass DMF research into it yet. And people are just holding on to this catch and release mortality thing. And what I'm telling you is, like, we're doing the right thing. Number one. Number two, it's all just a lie. It's just a lie to place blame on someone else so they can keep killing more fish that they shouldn't be able to kill. You know, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. So anyway, let's get into this stuff. So we're looking at like an 11% reduction. So you're saying, like, well, how do we get there? So one of the things on the slides, Cody, was that they were estimating a 17% increase in fishing mortality in 2025 because of the a little bit above average 2018 year class. So this is one of those things that you're like, wow, we didn't learn our lesson. Because we had a 30% increase with the 2015s and we did a number on them. We know that we have 6 vacant year classes coming, and we know that these 2018s are the last average year class. And 2019, it is not good. And it is not good up until today. So one would ask themselves, you know, if what is that? If you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it. So here is our first position. Pretty simple. Move the slot down. Move the slot down to like 24 to 27. Get those, because if you move the slot up, you're hitting the 2015s again. If you do like a 40 inch or over, a 36 inch or over, you're gonna hit the 2011s. You're gonna hit the 2015s soon, and then you'll hit the 2018s when they mature. And
it's really the about
one way.
But it's about protecting the total amount of fish. It's about keeping fish in the water. So in reality, if you look at the stock balance of this, you could even have a more open slot and slide it down more and have less of an impact than if you take a smaller slot and slide it up to where those fish are. It's just putting the opening on the scale of where all these fish are. And the further left you go and younger, there's less fish. There's less fish to target.
Yeah. So Cody, that's the problem. That's the problem with this modeling, because the modeling says there's more smaller fish. So you can understand that as a fish ages and goes through the system, there's fishing mortality, there's natural mortality, dies of a disease, a seal eats it, a shark eats it, a whatever eats it, or it dies of a disease or whatever. So there's a natural mortality rate, a fishing mortality rate as these fish get older. And when I begged and pleaded to put a smaller slot as an option, that's the first thing that I was told. Well, like, oh my gosh, you're going to catch more fish because they're smaller. And I'm like, okay, take your beanie off, your science beanie off, and put your reality beanie on. There are no smaller fish. And if they're easier to catch and there's less mortality, well, I don't know what to tell you. You know, I'm comfortable with that because, you know, we know that striped bass spawn in waves that are about the same size. So why wouldn't you want to maintain a robust year class? That's what got us out of the last moratorium. So if the time's right, you got a lot of fish in that place, that wave that the time was right. So, you know, position number one, slide that slot down to something around 24 to 27, get these 2018s out of the slot and let them grow. Let them learn how to be adult stripers. Let them do the spawning migration once or twice, kind of figure it out. You know, they got to learn how to be big boy and girl stripers. So that's position number one.
It's
going
to suck if like a slot moves up, like you're a fish, you make it through being small in the ocean, which is like the most, everything's trying to eat you when you're under 12 inches. You're like trying to just get food to grow, to get bigger. You got caught a couple times. You survive that release process. You get into the slot, you make it through the slot. And then like in a fishery, they bump the slot up. It's just got to be World War III for that fish. Just never, oh, never God, ending. It's like, never ending.
Oh, like what did I do to deserve this? You know what I mean?
Some fish that like the way that they've lived, they've like dodged, you know what I mean? Like they made it through one slot and they've had eternal protection. Granted, there's sharks and seals and everything else. Yeah,
and you know, Cody, we supported back in the day, we supported that one at 36 thing to go back to that because we didn't want the slots. We didn't want it to annihilate the 15s. And you gotta, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but that was our position before the decision was made. So you're like, okay, well, it increased harvest by 32% one year, 17% the next year. Can we really afford to do that to the 18s? My answer is no. Like, that's so dumb. Like, why would you pick something? Why would you pick a slot that you know next year it's going to increase by the harvest by 17%.
Especially when we lean into the, I think you already said it a couple of times, but like 6 straight years of poor spawns. So you don't know you have anything coming. So it's essentially you haven't worked in days. Your bank account is dwindling. And you go, I'm just going to make a big purchase right now. You can't.
I want that Cybertruck anyway.
I want it wrapped in the chromatic, you know, like it's a different color everywhere you're looking at it.
Yeah.
So
I want spinner rims that shoot lightning bolts in my Cybertruck.
Meanwhile, your bank account's $12. Yeah, exactly. We all know someone like that too. Every listener is probably thinking of their cousin who's like dead broke, but like shows up with the Louis bag.
Yeah, somebody's looking in the mirror and they're like, they're talking about me. So, okay, lower the slot. Get the 18s out of the slot. That's number one. So number two, you know, because we have that tight slot, there's not a lot of management options left. So we could slide the slot down, protect the 18s. Not 100% sure that the model's going to be able to handle that well because the aforementioned assumption that there's more smaller fish, even though they're not. I'm not a stock assessment scientist. I don't know. I hope it does. I won't know that until December 3rd when they put the presentation online, the final report. So the second thing is harvest, seasonal harvest closure versus non-targeting closures. So I'm just going to say this real quick. I'm going to define these things, okay? Because these are kind of new management terms that have only come up. Sorry, I was stretching there. These are new management terms that have only come up in the last couple of years. So a no-targeting closure basically means you can't fish. Now, if lightning strikes and you actually see a natural resources officer and you are fishing for striped bass, all you have to do is look at them and say, I am fishing for bluefish. I am fishing for false albacore. I am fishing for Atlantic bonito. In my area, I am fishing for redfish. I am fishing for speckled trout. And like, you know, here's the problem. Here's the problem on a state and county by county scale. The same judges that are seeing natural resources violations are seeing some pretty horrible stuff. You know, a guy abused his family. A guy is a career criminal. Someone has just done something horrible to a child. Really bad stuff. And then somebody walks in and they go, "We think he was fishing for striped bass during a no targeting closure, but he said he was fishing for bluefish." And the judge is going to go, "Get the hell out of here." And the other thing is that we all know these enforcement officers do an incredible job. They're great people out in the elements every day trying to protect the resources. They're woefully understaffed and woefully underfunded. And to have them take up time doing something like this versus really protecting the natural resources is absurd. And we heard those comments from the law enforcement committee. As an example, you know, Potomac River is patrolled by Virginia law enforcement, and they have, I believe, a 4 or a 6 week no targeting closure. And they reported that they have not written a single ticket in 2024. So, and the law enforcement committee voted this the least enforceable option out of 27. Now, here's where it gets a little, it's only 1 minute, I'm going to cover this. So there were two different ways to look at no targeting closures and how to quantify how many fish they saved. There was one method that was, that basically said, no trips for striped bass will occur. Okay, well, you know what? It's like that little video you see on social media with the little kid going, "I'm in the land of make-believe." And he's like staring up into the sky and they play that little like mystical music. I don't know what kid's show it was from, but that's where those people are living, in the land of make-believe. We don't know. Will there be a certain amount of people that adhere to it? Yeah. And those are probably old retired dudes who fish 200 days a year. And then there's going to be a family who can only go on vacation for 1 week a year. And that's going to be the vacation that they signed up for. And they're going to do whatever the hell they want. And then there's going to be every little kid off every little pier. And they're going to be fishing with bloodworms and J-hooks for white perch or spot or whatever. And they're going to catch a shit ton of little stripers. You're going to give all of them tickets? I'd like to see that, you know, off their grandparents' pier. That'd be great when they visit grandma and grandpa over here for a week. No, kids, you can't fish. You're going to get a ticket. Yeah, right. So what is quantifiable are no harvest closures. And that means that you still get to fish. You just got to throw stuff back. Period. Hard stop. You can't possess fish. So I don't know how to, I'm certainly not going to give them any press, but there was someone running around that made a video that said that we were calling for a harvest moratorium. We have never once called for a full harvest moratorium. And based on these numbers, I don't know if it's necessary yet. But that's basically, because we're on all these calls, these stock assessment technical committee calls, and we can just click the little button and see who else is on the call. And the person who made these false claims, I've never seen them on one of these calls. I've seen them on striped bass board calls, but never these technical committee calls where like the rubber really meets the road and you get kind of like an inside look to it. So I don't know, maybe they don't understand the difference between a non-targeting closure and a seasonal harvest closure, but you're basically looking at a couple of weeks for seasonal harvest closure. So really the decision is coming down to this. Do you not want to fish at all? Or do you have to kill a striper? And are you friends with anyone who owns a tackle shop or is a sales rep for one of these companies and understand what these non-targeting closures financially will do to your friends? And it's pretty clear based on what I read before that these boats are making a lot of money throwing fish back, 460 to be exact in one day. So I don't know. Do you want to bite your nose off to spite your face? Because that's really what it boils down to, I guess. or just not understanding the terms. So a no harvest, a seasonal no harvest closure would equate to what? Probably 3-4 weeks of not being able to kill a striper. And most states don't even have a season unless they close like spawning areas, like where I live or in New York. So what's so bad about that? I mean, what is so you move the slot down, you have a short no harvest closure, and then everything still works, and we still rebuild and we do all of these things versus a completely unenforceable no targeting closure that could really hurt businesses and, you know, just blue collar striper fishermen who do not get to fish as much as a lot of the people that we represent. And we are very keenly aware of fairness in all of this. So,
do we want to tap in at all on any, the dynamic of commercial here in these reductions and what our stance is?
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah. So let's just say, for example, be perfectly clear on this. If any kind of no targeting closure passes, you should not be allowed to commercially fish at all during that time period. So let me repeat that. So if there is, like, let's say a 4-week no targeting closure, there should be during that exact same four-week time frame, there should be no commercial fishing allowed for striped bass. You cannot just hand the resources over to one sector. So that's number one. Number two, a lot of the states are not, because of the lack of abundance of striped bass, a lot of the states are not hitting their quota for striped bass. Some states are. Some jurisdictions are not. So we are pushing really hard that if a no targeting closure comes down, you can't fish if we can't fish. If we have to take an 11% reduction, you have to take an 11% reduction, and not a pretend one, a real one, off your harvest, not the quota. If you're not hitting quota, what is an 11% reduction going to matter if you're only hitting 85% of quota? That's no reduction. That's a reduction on paper. And go back to the beginning of this podcast. You have problems with the FES, you have recreational effort dropping like a stone, you have all of these things. We're down to 40% now, and very, not arguably, much lower than that because of the problem with the FES. So we're doing our part, and they have to take the reduction off of their harvest, not their quota. 100%, and it has to be equal. It's not a percentage of anything. It has to be equal to what we're doing. And if you're not going to help rebuild the stock, then you shouldn't participate in the fishery. I don't know what else to say. And release mortality, like I keep saying, with the FES, with how much it's dropped naturally through lack of fishing trips, we're participating at a very high level. And there's also a ton of people that we've kind of noticed over the last couple of years that are like, yeah, I kind of see what's going on, and I just can't keep a striper anymore. That's a function of it too. That's a real function of all of this. So anyway, that's kind of where we stand. To kind of reiterate, we would support no harvest closures for a small amount of time. That is not a moratorium. It's the sad little man, the dying industry. We never called for a moratorium. So that's number one. Number two, we'll have that non-possession rule for a couple of weeks. Just, you know, that harvest closure, that's very quantifiable. Commercials have to walk lockstep with us. So slide the slot down to that 24 to 27, a very short window of the no possession, a no a seasonal no harvest closure for a couple of weeks. Commercial lockstep, slide the slot down, and we should get there pretty easy. The reduction is not nearly as bad or bleak as we thought. Now, all that said, if we're going to be responsible about this fishery, we have to kind of look at what's going to happen after 2027. So great, we rebuild in 2029. We touch that target level. Actually, we go over it a little bit of the target we go over. And then what happens after that? So there's going to be a lot of management stuff on stripers. This is the big one. That information will be posted on December 3rd. We'll turn our letter around December 4th. We'll probably do like a rapid reaction podcast sometime December 3rd after that's posted, so everyone knows what's going on. And if you're busy and it's the holidays and you put on 12 pounds vis-a-vis turkey and dressing.
Sounds like you're projecting there. Is that a personal experience?
Yes. And you're taught in that L-tryptophan's knocking the brakes, you know, beating the brakes off of you, and you believe in what we're doing, our letter will be there to give you a voice. So I don't know, Cody. I hope this helps everyone out. Gives you a little bit of peace and comfort from a fisheries perspective while you're spending time with the people that you love.
Yeah. If anyone listened this far and they're going into the holidays, going to be around family, once we get through the holidays, shoot us a message. If you were the crazy person who wouldn't shut up about fisheries politics and fisheries management, and you ruined all the family time because you wouldn't stop talking about how bad striper situation is. If that was you during the holidays, shoot us a message after. We got one or two. We got some brand new hats that aren't even live. We'll send them out.
Cody, do you think there's any situation, like, you know, obviously on like the grand political scale in the country, you know, anytime you sit down to dinner, you know, polite people don't talk about religion or politics during the holidays during a family thing, but you know, you don't want to bring stuff up because people are going to be on the other side of the fence. I think every family has that. Do you think there's any like other side of the fence fisheries families where there's like a super conservation guy and a super kill 'em all guy across from the table, and they're like, don't talk about striped bass, you know, until supper's over?
I don't know, but if that's you, you got to shoot us a message, let us know how the holidays went. And we got custom hats that are a new species that no one's ever seen. We'll allocate, like, we'll set two to the side for the first two people who message us their how they ruin Thanksgiving dinner by talking about striper conservation. That's a new challenge for y'all.
Oh, I hope it doesn't catch fire on social. So happy Thanksgiving, everyone, again, and all of our best to you. And you'll hear from us right after the holiday.